A classical liberal approach to human rights. That's what the new Human Rights Commissioner Tim Wilson promises as he heads into his new job today. We've dragged him away from organising his desk and unpacking the boxes, and he joins us this morning. Tim Wilson, welcome to Mornings.
Good morning.
I don't know how true it is,
by the way. I am literally unpacking things.
Is that right? I was just assuming that there might be a bit of that involved. Now, the six other commissioners all have specialised areas that, you know, Indigenous, social justice, age, those sorts of things. You don't. Do you know why that is?
Well, these positions are established under the Human Rights Commission Act, and the broad focus of the Human Rights Commissioner is essentially an advocacy and education role in comparison to more specialised areas where the other commissioners report to areas specifically related to discrimination and different acts of Parliament.
So yours is a broader brief, basically, than the others?
It is, and it's. I mean, human rights are very large and broad concepts, and, of course, everybody has their own different interpretations of what human rights are. But, of course, we also have what's within our laws and obviously with relation to what's in international treaties. And one of the challenges, and I'm quite open about this, is what I'm going to choose to focus on, because, of course, they are in, there are many different issues that can be focused on in this role.
Mm. So you've written this morning about your role, and you talk about taking a classical liberal approach. What does that mean?
Well, to me, that means that the role of human rights is to preserve individuals from the abuse of power of government and really to have a structure in society where people can unleash their maximum potential. And, of course, everybody will have a different view about what how that approach should be taken. But what I want to make clear as part of my focus is that we should be defending human rights to stop the abuse of power by government over individuals and doing things like limiting basic freedoms, what I would call traditional human rights, around freedom of speech, association, movement, property rights, religious worship, and, of course, things like arbitrary detention.
Do humans need to be protected from each other, though, as well as being protected from excesses of government?
Well, certainly when it comes to rights violations, and of course that's the case, yes. So it's not just about government. But what I don't think, I think what has crept into a lot of discussion, this is just my opinion in human rights, is that a lot of social objectives which are otherwise worthy, which we seek to aspire to, have sort of been conflated to the status of rights. And as a consequence, they all end up getting diluted and lose integrity, because the principle behind, and certainly from a classical liberal perspective on human rights, is that they have this very strong integrity and can be exercised relatively consistently. But the more things you conflate with human rights, of course, the more likely you are they come into conflict and therefore have to be constantly compromised.
Mm. You're a big supporter of freedom of speech, as you've said, and you say that if in doubt, you defer towards more freedom, not less. But what about when it comes to the clash of freedom of speech and freedom to discriminate? Of course, Section 18C of the Race Discrimination Act is the thing I'm thinking of here.
Yeah, well, Section 18C isn't specifically around discrimination. It's about language that insults, offends, humiliates or intimidates. And I've made it clear that my opinion is that section of the Racial Discrimination Act should go, because I think it sets a very low bar and justification for shutting down free speech in comparison to other types of restrictions on free speech, such as, say, directly inciting violence. My difference is towards free speech because I think as a society there will always be people have different views. Sometimes they'll be challenging views, but the best thing is to have them aired and then for people to respond. I don't think the law should be set at the line where polite society ends. There should be a gap so that we can always make sure we have robust debate, even if it's just to remind ourselves where the barriers of acceptable speech is.
Mm. Tim Wilson is with us, formerly of the Institute of Public Affairs, now the latest addition to the Human Rights Commission here in Australia. Just sticking with Section 18, so I know it's been worked over, but I'm just interested in specifically what it says. It, as you say, it says offensive behaviour, unlawful for a person to do an act otherwise than in private if the act is reasonably likely in all circumstances to offend, insult, humiliate and intimidate another person or group of people. I'm just sort of struggling to see where you draw the line there, because clearly deep offence can be caused, which can perpetuate a status for a group of people. And this part of the Act seems to me, it can be argued, really does quite clearly set out to make sure that we don't step over those lines.
Well, I don't think we should step over those lines. I don't think people should engage in vilification or offensive conduct. In fact, I think we have lots of different social norms and conventions about how we engage with each other, which privately essentially regulate our conduct and our speech to make sure that we maintain standards. But the issue here is whether there should be a restriction on free speech on the basis of things like offending or insulting somebody. And when we're talking about issues around race and ethnic origin, we're actually also infusing with it ideas of culture and identity. And the simple reality is, when cross-cultural communication, it's very difficult to understand what's likely to reasonably offend somebody else, despite what we may otherwise think. And it's important to make sure that people can feel free to have open discussion, and then for ideas to be discussed, debated, challenged, rather than shut down simply because they may offend somebody else. And of course, people end up self-censoring themselves in some circumstances for fear of falling foul of that provision.
Yeah, or self-censoring because they know full well that something is just, you know, beyond the pale. But you're saying that's not a matter for the law, that's a matter for our norms in relationships.
Absolutely, because when it comes down to it, free speech doesn't come without consequences. If people say things that are absurd, ridiculous, inaccurate, or even offensive, there is a response and a counter-response, which is people's credibility is diminished, their status is diminished, their integrity and the respect they receive from others is diminished, and that can flow, of course, onto their professional reputation as well. That's a much better way of dealing with these issues rather than trying to simply make sure that people, there's a legal avenue to pursue people because of such conduct.
Mm-hmm. Tim Wilson is with us as he unpacks the boxes literally and takes up his new post as a human rights commissioner. One of the things you've said in your piece in the Australian today is that in practice, your sense of what human rights are means defending individuals from the abuse of power of government. But you also say it's protection such as protection against arbitrary detention. The government has put 10 unaccompanied refugee children on Nauru. Are you concerned that breaches your sense of what should be protected here?
Well, it depends. I have to say, I'm not fully across all the details, and the Commission has organised briefings for me with relation to asylum seekers, so I'll keep my comments very broad for that reason. But, of course, I don't think that children should be in detention, and there's nothing to me that's fundamentally wrong with people being in detention for the period to establish their identity and make sure their health and security is fine. But children shouldn't be in detention for prolonged periods of time. And I think the Commission, that's why they've prompted this inquiry into children in detention, precisely for those sorts of reasons.
Mm. So you support that inquiry then?
I have supported that inquiry, and I think it will be challenging for both previous governments and for the current government to make sure that children are being treated and protected appropriately through our migration system, because really children don't belong in detention.
Mm. So would you want to see those children taken out of detention? I understand you're still to get your briefings, but would your instinct be to take them out of detention immediately?
Well, my instinct would be to take them out of detention, but I'll just say that's my instinct. I'm waiting to get briefings and to get more detail before I make any further comment.
Yeah. And just broadly, what do you think of the state of freedom of speech in Australia at the moment? Do you think there is any serious threat?
Well, I think there's risks of incremental corrosion of free speech, and we saw that last year where the Parliament considered an omnibus bill which would have basically made it, taken the provisions of the Racial Discrimination Act to extend to all sorts of identity groups and potentially have gone as far as all forms of public conduct. Now, I think that would have been very damaging, and it took people at the Institute of Public Affairs and elsewhere to stand up against those issues. And I think what there isn't at the moment is a constituency of average Australians standing up and defending free speech, even if sometimes what they're defending is language that's not popular, because let's face it, none of us ever are called in to defend free speech just because people are saying the word please or thank you too much. Mm-hmm. And I think there needs to be more of a defence, including from the Human Rights Commission. That's obviously what I will in part be doing, to stand up for the principle, even when sometimes it's uncomfortable.
Mm. Somebody on the text actually making the point, and I wanted to ask you about this, Our texter John says, definition of hypocrisy, someone taking a $300,000 plus job in an organisation which he's been agitating for the abolition of. How do you respond to John?
Well, the problem, John, is your comments are factually incorrect. I have never called for the abolition of the Australian Human Rights Commission. Some of my former colleagues at the IPA did. I think it's quite important to note that I chose not to do that, and I was entitled to say as I saw fit in that organisation, including making those statements, but I did not do so. I did have criticisms in the past of the Human Rights Commission, and most of that was related to me. For the points I've just outlined, I don't think there was a robust defence of principles like free speech. And in one sense, the appointment of me to Human Rights Commissioner, of course, partly addresses that problem.
Okay. Tim Wilson, I'll let you get back to the boxes. Thank you for your time today.
A pleasure. Thank
you. Bye-bye.